the truth is this, is that my job in my marriage is to love, like I said in my vows. It has nothing about being loved. It's not about being loved. See, the lie is that I need to find someone who will love me. And I think so many couples enter into their marriage and go through their relationship over the years believing that I've got to keep figuring out how to get her to love me.
Well, you'll hear more from Dr. Greg Smalley as he and his wife Erin join us today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Greg and Erin Smalley always have such great marriage wisdom to share, and I am so proud that they're on the team here at Focus on the Family. They've written a new book called Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, 12 Secrets for a Lifelong Romance. Greg and Erin, welcome back to the studio.
It's a pleasure as always.
Thanks for having us.
It is so good to have you on the team. I just so appreciate every day you walk in the door thinking about marriage and how to strengthen marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those that kind of have an idea of what Focus is about, we do the broadcast, but we do so much more. And one of the things we do is research. And that research tells us in the last 12 months, over 130,000 marriages were saved through the Lord's work in our midst. And I am so proud of you and what the Lord has done to accomplish that. So thank you right from the top of the
program.
Thank
you for having us.
Yeah. Isn't that an awesome feeling?
It really
though?
Is.
I mean, when you're talking about how do we get the culture moving in a healthier direction, both the Christian culture and the culture at large, this is one of the key things we have to do is make marriages stronger.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a passion of ours. How do we not only... Is it about how we have a great marriage, but we love helping other people have that as well.
Well, and it's a great goal. Again, and it's good in your testimony that you had difficult times because you know what? I'm convinced no one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get better at it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to say is that over the years, I mean, we had no idea what we were walking into when we married, yet we have learned and been equipped in so many ways. And it's a joy then to pass that on to others and to encourage them in those difficult times.
Before we get into your book called Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, how does a couple that's struggling right now, I mean, they're hearing you say that, but they're in maybe year three or four, and now they're thinking, I really don't like this guy. He doesn't pick up his dirty clothes. I mean, how do you begin to change your attitude so that your relationship changes?
You know, the cool part is, like, think about like playing ping pong. If Erin and I have been playing the same way for years and years and years, all I have to do is hit the ball a little bit different, put a different spin on it. Even if she tries to hit it back the same old way, it'll come off her paddle differently. I always have the ability to influence my relationship, my marriage. And so it really comes down to doing this. The worst question to ask is, how do I have a great marriage? The best question to ask is, how do I become a great husband? How do I become a great wife? See, I have the ability to control what I do and how I show up. And when I show up differently, then see, it's going to influence, like that ping pong game, it'll influence our relationship, hopefully in a better way.
Yeah. But, you know, it seems like marriage in the cultural context, its back is up against the ropes. People don't feel that motivated to honor marriage because, you know what, my mom and dad didn't stay married, and I'm not sure I'm going to. How do we get people to honor marriage, to do what the Bible asks us, requires us to do?
Yeah, for us, some of the things that we've learned in terms of what does this really look like, you know, if you were to ask me, hey, Greg, what do you love? What do you appreciate? What do you value about Erin? Well, I could rattle off a whole bunch of things. But if you were to ask me a while ago, what do you value about your marriage? See, our marriage is a separate entity. There's always in a marriage relationship, there's me, there's her, there's then our relationship. And I never really thought that through. Yeah, what do I really love? What do I like? What do I appreciate about my marriage relationship? Great verse that says, where your treasure is, so what you value, there will your heart be also. So a great way to strengthen your relationship is to begin to think about, yeah, what do I love about our relationship?
When we talk about society and what's going on, what are some of the lies that are going on about marriage in the culture today?
Yes, some of those lies are, you know, you think about that when you find the one that everything's going to be super easy and there's not going to be challenges that come along because you found your soulmate. And that's something that our culture feeds us regularly. And the truth is, everyone is going to have challenges in their relationship. And so when you walk into a marriage relationship thinking, oh, we're not going to have any challenges, kind of like we did, you know, you're greatly disappointed.
You know, some of the other ones, like conflict is a sign of a bad relationship. Like if we fight, if we experience conflict, it means that, you know, our relationship, there's something wrong with it.
Well, and that's particularly true in the Christian community. Is it okay to have disagreement?
It is not only okay, we really do believe that conflict can actually take us to deeper levels of connection, of intimacy, if we learn how to walk through it. We always say that it's not conflict's not the problem. Combat is the problem.
Yeah, there's fine line there.
Yeah, but so if I'm really upset and I'm yelling, or if I'm withdrawing, you know, if I'm getting real critical, I mean, that's the combat kind of stuff. That's never good ever for a relationship. But when we disagree, when we see things differently, see what happens is when we walk through that, well, I learned something new about Aaron, maybe a feeling or a need. I learn about myself. I don't even know that bothered me. What's going on there? So, I mean, that can be a very, very good thing for a relationship.
Greg, you're describing something that I think for men is difficult.
Yeah.
Because a lot of men would say, that sounds exhausting. I don't know why that is, but I don't have that curiosity. I mean, it needs to be simpler for me. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not trying to defend it, but you need that curiosity, kind of like Solomon in the Song of Solomon. It's a beautiful description of how both people, both spouses need to have that curiosity.
Yeah. The truth is this. We are going to have conflict. We are going to disagree. We're going to get into these arguments. It's going to happen. I can either ignore it, sweep it under the rug. I can let that fester. I can let all that become a bigger problem. Or I can choose to do something about this. That I love it. In James, it says, when trials hit, consider that an opportunity.
Huh.
I mean, if we just took that and just applied that to conflict, going, you know, when we disagree, there's an opportunity there. Why not? Why not take advantage of that?
Okay, but the question is, why do we not see it in that way, especially in the Christian community? Why do we see it as abrasive, you know, whatever? How come we don't see it as opportunity? What's our issue when we want to simply have conflict?
Yeah, I don't think anybody likes conflict. I don't like it, so please don't let me paint a picture like, I love conflict. Aaron, let's fight tonight. Why not? I don't like it.
We put it on the calendar, schedule it regularly.
Yeah, to be honest, a couple nights ago, we were in a pretty big fight. Just a disagreement. I mean, we saw things very differently when it came to our son. And I hate that. I hate the feeling of when we're in disharmony. I absolutely cannot stand when she and I just couldn't get to a good spot. And we talked it through to a point, but there was still this feeling of, I absolutely hate that disconnected feeling.
How do you get to the resolution of that then? Mm-hmm. I mean, there you are.
Well, I'll tell you, that night we started the conversation about 8:30 at night after Greg had spent all day on the finances.
Oh, nice.
So it's a perfect opportunity late at night. Finances and parenting, you know, it's a great combination to
all
have a great experience having a deep conversation or discussion. And so we just hung in there, you know, and we start recognizing what is happening, because that's why I don't like it, is because of my previous experiences with conflict. Typically, if it hasn't gone well, then you don't want to sign up for it again. So there we are. We're like, here we are again. I mean, this is the same thing, same cycle we've done since our first year of marriage. And you know what? Finally, it's like everything just calms down when we recognize, oh, we're stuck. And, you know, then we know what to do. You know, take a break. It's 8:30 at night. We love each other. We're going to resolve this, and we're going to get to the other side of it.
And it's a good picture that you're painting, but emotionally with couples, we don't have the backup. We don't have reverse. Mm-hmm. So we're stuck in drive, and we got our foot on the accelerator, because if you're going to challenge it, then let's go for it. Rather than taking the pause, putting it in neutral, then backing the car up to say, okay, we're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. Hey, what's that how have you learned to do that, to put the emotion in reverse, to get back to a place where you can both laugh at each other and say, okay, let's wait till tomorrow and we'll get to the bottom of it?
Well, for me, one of the things that honestly, and I'm not making this up, this really did happen. We're sitting on the couch and it wasn't going well. We just weren't getting anywhere. And it felt like we were both more and more frustrated. There came a point in time Aaron was talking about something. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but there was like, I was starting to check out and I realized again in that moment, man, we were really under spiritual attack.
Huh.
Because here's what happens. So she's talking and I hear the lines in my head going, see, she's to understand you. She's misrepresenting you. She just would listen. She just would give you a chance. Just explain yourself, man. All this would go away. I mean, she just won't listen. She didn't really care. She didn't love you. I mean, honestly, that stuff is racing through my mind. And the thing that I have learned after 24 years of marriage is when the words turn extreme in my mind, that is Satan. He is all about making me believe that she is all that extreme stuff that's racing in my head. And honestly, I kind of sat back. And remember I said to you, said, you know what? Hey, man, I love you. We've gone through, how many of these fights have we had over the course of years? A bunch. I said, and look, we're still
same
here.
Thing.
And we still love each other. We'll get through this. Aaron, and I said to her, honey, you're not my enemy. And it just, there was a way, and it didn't solve anything, but there was a way in which it just kind of broke us out of there's a mental churn that Satan goes after us by feeding us these lines.
Well,
these
and
lies.
Our flesh. I don't want to let our flesh off the hook.
I would rather blame Satan.
Yeah, right.
It's just is so much easier.
It's true. Both are at work. Absolutely. John 10:10 says he comes to steal, kill, and destroy, and he definitely wants to do that in our marriages. You may have answered this, but we talk, and again, we're always drawn to the negative side. But what does love look like in a healthy marriage? Paint that picture for us.
Yeah, this is actually probably for us as of late. This has become a huge piece of now looking back 24 years and going, man, I didn't get it in the beginning. And here's what happened. Okay, the other day, I was taking our wedding video and I wanted to digitize it. And so I was watching it with my son. So he's just sitting there and he's mocking me. You know, he's like, well, you look a lot different back there. Your hair was gray and
lighter.
You were thinner. And so he's just being playful around it. And so we're just watching and he's like, oh, that's pretty cool. Well, I got to the part, the vows, you know, as we're standing up there. And I tell you, as I listened to what I was saying, I heard myself say the absolute key to having a great marriage. I mean, I heard it was right there, plain and simple, and it was the part, so it's kind of like this, so, you know, I, Greg, take you, Aaron, to be my wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, you know, the typical stuff, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love, there it was. I'm telling you, of all the things that we've learned about how to have a great marriage, that simple thing, this idea of to love, I think is more misunderstood than any other concept. I think in our culture, we believe that when we go into a marriage that it's about loving and being loved. And that is I think, one of the biggest lies. That's not true at all. It causes so many people to get so distracted and it creates the wrong paradigm. The truth is this, is that my job in my marriage is to love. Like I said in my vows, it has nothing about being loved. It's not about being loved. See, the lie is that I need to find someone who will love me. And I think so many couples enter into their marriage and go through their relationship over the years believing that I've got to keep figuring out how to get her to love me. Like when we first got married, I desperately needed her to do things so that I would feel successful. That's how that really showed up.
And for me, I would look to him, you know, tell me I'm valuable, tell me that I'm good enough. And it was in many ways, love me, but also, you know, value me as a person, which isn't a bad thing. But the myth is that we look to someone else for that. But really, the truth is that we are fully, completely loved by this amazing God. And I wish 24 years ago I would have recognized that and known that walking into our marriage that I am loved, I am accepted, I am valued, and I'm good enough.
Okay, before we move on, this has really become the biggest thing that I'm understanding about marriage. I mean, just think of that. What would it have been like in the beginning for me if I really truly would have understood that I am fully, completely loved by God? He has loved me with an everlasting love. For God so loved the world. I mean, He's already met that need. That need to be loved is completely met already by God. Instead, see, I went in, I was turning to Aaron. I was saying, you've got to make me feel certain ways. See, the love, me chasing love meant that I needed to feel successful. Like just not too long ago, this Christmas, you know, we went and searched for the Smalley family Christmas tree. And so we drive up in the mountains of Colorado and we pull off. I pull into this spot and Aaron goes, well, I wouldn't park here.
Yeah, because, you know, the infamous, let's create our own parking spot.
Yeah, yeah.
I
right.
knew it was a disaster in the making, but we were looking for a family adventure.
Yeah. So I pull the car in, parked in the spot. We go out. We find the perfect tree. We cut this thing down. We drag it back, put it in the car. So now I'm pulling out. Well, I get stuck. Just like she said.
In the snow.
In the snow. And so these couple guys were walking by. They're now pushing on the car, rocking on the car, trying to help us. As I start to pull out, our vehicle slides down this embankment and lands next to this gigantic tree. Like, it didn't bang into the tree, but it was like a millimeter next to this big honking tree. And therefore, if I had tried to back out anymore, it would have raked the whole side of our car. It would have damaged our car. And I was so mad. And, of course, Aaron is going, I told you this is why you shouldn't have parked in this spot.
And this wasn't that long ago.
No, not at all. So for me, though, in that moment, I'm just glaring at her, you know, because I felt so stupid, so failed.
Yeah.
Like, I screwed up. Now, look, I'm going to ruin our car. I'm going to have to pay money to get this thing fixed.
How'd you get it out?
This good old boy in a dually pickup truck comes by and gives the strap and literally pulls it away from the tree enough to where we could back out. And so we survived. The car's fine. But it's one more example in my life that I instantly started to try to get her to understand why she shouldn't say that. How was I supposed to know that there was a snow embankment? I mean, I started defending myself, all the same stuff over and over, because I felt failed. I wasn't feeling successful. And now I'm trying to get her to do something so that I feel better. And I've pursued that thing again and again and again in our marriage. But what I'm learning now, and what I do a better job, is that, see, to go to God first. He's the one that helps. I don't need that stuff from Aaron now.
When she's saying to you, though, hey, you know what? I told you so. Yeah. You say, oh, just a second, Aaron. I got to go pray.
Yeah, no. I wish I could.
Is that what you should do?
Yeah, you know, being honest. Yeah. That would be the ideal. I'm not capable of doing that. And so we got into a little battle there. But on the drive home, as I was quiet, giving her the silent treatment, because she wasn't giving me what I was wanting, I did go to the Lord. And what's so cool, like, I love 2 Corinthians 12:9. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness so that Christ's power may rest upon me. That's become the verse that I go to. And I will say that back to the Lord. And there's a way in which that I get to a very different spot. When I take the time, when I get out of this thing that we're going through, and I really just plug back into God.
Well, and it's that frame of mind. It's a different frame of mind. You know, we're talking about your book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, 12 Secrets for a Lifelong Romance. Before we leave today, though, something that really jumped out at me in reading the material, sacrifice is what love looks like. Mm-hmm. That's a powerful statement. What'd you mean by it?
You know, really what sacrifice is, it's giving up something that you have. So whether it's your time, your money, your possessions, your comfort, you're giving that up for someone that you consider more valuable than you.
Huh.
So really, that's love in action. It's, you know, I love the scripture that talks about greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends.
Aaron, let me ask you this, though. In marriage, so often, we do that in the dating phase.
Mm-hmm.
We'll lay down everything. My jacket over the puddle, open the door, take care of the bill. I mean, we'll do everything. But it seems like once the I do's occur, spouses forget the sacrifice part. Mm-hmm. And now it's just how you irritate me.
Yeah. And that's what we start focusing on, is the irritations and the annoyances and, you know, he always does that, versus going back to, I am fully loved. Therefore, those things, you know what, you just, you know, by the wayside, and start focusing on, because I'm so loved, how can I then put that into action in the abundance and the overflowing love of God that I can serve and sacrifice for my husband?
How do you keep that at the forefront of your mind, though, day in and day out? How do I sacrifice today? I think I understand it because I try to use it as a trigger for me when I get home and there's some chaos. And, you know, to get to the dishes is, I don't want to present something false like I'm always doing that or even several times a week doing it. But occasionally I can see that, you know, Gene will be overwhelmed with a lot of other things, and I'll try to jump in and do something. I don't know that she sees it as often as I'd like her to see it, but it's that trigger, how to just do an action rather than ask for it, right?
For me, it's just that understanding that my purpose, my destiny within my marriage is simply to love, that there is nothing else. And that, I'm so simple-minded that I just make this easy for me. And so my goal is to love. I mean, take 1 John 4:11. It's just, listen to this. It says, beloved, which, by the way, means much loved. So God is reminding us that, hey, beloved, much loved. It says that if I have loved you, so you ought to love one another. Twice we're being reminded that God has loved us to free us up to focus in on what is our true purpose, and that's to love others. Mm. And so I then needed, okay, so love, it's this nebulous, wow, love, what does that mean? What it means, as Aaron is talking about, is just simply to sacrifice. It says in 1 John 3:16, this is how we know what love is. I mean, it's right there. This is how we know what love is. If Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, we ought to lay down our life for someone else. That, what I've been doing lately is just over and over and over, I just remind myself, this is my opportunity today, is to sacrifice for my wife, to give up something that I value, whatever, doing the dishes, I've got time, I've got something else maybe I'd rather be doing. I want to give that up because she is more valuable than I am. Huh. And I just keep saying that. We've been teaching our kids this, just been going over that verse, Erin, mm-hmm. that you mentioned.
In Sweet Annie, our 8-year-old, she has gotten this. Literally one morning I came down and I made her bacon for breakfast. That's what she wanted, was bacon. Three
you
pieces.
Wouldn't.
Yeah,
I
right.
know.
I mean, wise child.
Three pieces of bacon. Well, our 18-year-old comes down, Murphy, and she says, oh, I really wanted bacon. And Sweet Annie looks up at me out of the corner of her eye and says, Mom, I'm going to lay my life down for Murphy. I'm going to give her a piece of my bacon. And I was like, that's a huge sacrifice to give bacon up.
I mean, she's getting it, though.
She is.
The other day she got in the car and said, Daddy, you'll never guess what I did today. What? So this is after school. She goes, today we got smelly pencils, and mine smelled like a watermelon. And I'm thinking, what is going on?
Well, what's going on at
that
school?
Yeah. She goes, but this other girl wanted the watermelon one, and so I laid down my life. I gave that to her. That's it.
Yeah, it's a great illustration of how Annie's future husband will look back and appreciate what you've done in Annie's life.
I hope. And then they'll take care of me.
Right. But so many more points to talk about. Let's come back next time and continue the discussion on your book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, 12 Secrets for a Lifelong Romance. Can we do it?
Oh, we'd
Absolutely.
Love to.
Absolutely.
Well, what a great conversation with Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife, Erin. And I do hope you can be back with us next time as we continue. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
If we can understand that we are completely and totally loved by God, then we'll be so much more secure in our marriages and not rely on our spouse to make us feel loved. Greg and Erin Smalley have pointed out such beautiful truths about the way that God designed marriage to work. What a powerful couple they are, and we feel so privileged to be hosting them on our tour of events that's taking us to Pretoria, Cape Town, and Durban. The Smalleys are presenting a marriage event entitled Resist the Drift. Over time, the busyness of life creeps in, and even the most deeply committed couples can feel like they're living parallel lives rather than enjoying life together. Their once happily ever after can quickly turn into an endless grind of work, chores, errands, and driving kids around. And the pull of social media becomes more compelling than engaging with one's spouse. Let Greg and Erin help you to rekindle that heart-to-heart spark of communication between you and your spouse. Join us for a date night out that will revitalize your marriage relationship. All the details are on our website at safamily.co.za. We hope that you can join us. Please also look out for Greg and Erin's book called Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage while you're online, or give us a call on 031-716-3300 to order. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa. And I do hope that you'll tune in tomorrow for the conclusion of our program, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.